You're listening to WHTC in Holland. Time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our Talk of the Town number 395-1450. This morning, our guest is Joe Havman, Representative Joe Havman. And good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Juke. Glad to be here.
And good to have you here once again. And let's see, we got several things to talk about this morning, but anyone has questions, they can call us here at 395-1450. Let's start out with the Medicaid thing.
Oh, you want to start right into Medicaid?
Yeah.
Okay. Our last day of session was last week. We get a little in-district work period, some time off that I'm going back and forth 1 or 2 days a week and working with some throughout the state, but we're not in session right now. But last week we had one of our kind of mini marathon sessions where we try and clean everything up before we leave town. And the big issue on the agenda was the Medicaid reform, the Healthy Michigan reform
right.
that we've been talking about since the governor proposed it in his budget back in February. The House voted that out the week before, and this is probably one of the most controversial things we've done, certainly this term. It's been the most controversial. And as some of my colleagues have said, and I completely agree, all of us on the Republican side really started off as a no on this, feeling like we didn't want to do anything that gave the appearance that we were supporting Obamacare.
Yeah.
So it was a really tough decision. But we had two very conservative members that serve as co-chairs or sub-chairs on appropriations with me, author the bill, come up with a bill, made some changes to it, and it was a pretty good first start. Put some reforms in that are going to make Michigan residents more accountable if Medicaid does expand. It was then sent off to a committee called Michigan Competitiveness, chaired by probably one of the most conservative members of the House, Mike Shirky out of the Jackson area. And Mike and his committee really tore the bill apart and just really dug in and came out with a product that doesn't just expand Medicaid but reforms health.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare here in Michigan. And I was very proud of it when Mike got up and said, you know, I started off as a no, but I got to yes because we truly are changing the way we're doing healthcare here in Michigan. We did this back in the Engler days when we added managed care to our healthcare, to the existing Medicaid, and now Michigan is one of the most effective states in the way it handles Medicaid and the way it manages people's healthcare if they're on any kind of public Medicaid assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And this, with the implementation of Obamacare, with the reality that that is the law of the land, we're stuck with it. And there are a lot of people that believe that somehow we can just say no. We can close our eyes to this and say we're not going to participate. In reality, the taxes to Washington, D.C. to implement this are already being paid. This year alone, we will be paying about $1.5 billion in taxes, in just business taxes. When you add up the taxes for next year in business taxes and individual taxes, all the taxes being paid for Obamacare, we will be in excess of $20 billion. $20 billion. Now, keep in mind that our gross budget is about $48
billion. Right.
That's our total gross budget for the state of Michigan. That includes all the federal funds and fees and everything else we charge, plus what we tax. And now we're going to send an additional $20 billion to Washington, D.C. And some people that want us to do that continue to send that money and not take anything in return, not get any benefit back from Washington, and leave 400,000 to 500,000 people without health care. So with the reforms we have, with the challenges of having to comply with the law in some way and pay these taxes, we decided that the best way to do it is to reform it, make out our own plan, go to the federal government, ask for some waivers to change the plan the way we want. And frankly, I believe we came up with a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
So it was about 50-50 on the Republican side. We had 29 yeses. 29 people supported it. We could have twisted some arms and got over half, but the speaker chose to let a few people off, and if they truly wanted to be no's, But that it was a controversial vote. It was a gut-wrenching vote for me, frankly. It was probably the toughest vote I've taken in 4.5 years. Now that it's done, I believe it was the right vote, and I'm going to stand by that vote. I respect those that voted against it, and I understand their reasons. I could have made those same arguments. After we voted it out, it went over to the Senate, and the Senate worked on it for a week. Now, keep in mind, it was a House bill, but the Senate had since February to do their own plan or to work with us. They were brought into meetings, made aware of what we were doing. So it wasn't like we sprung it on them and they had no idea. But formally, they were sent the bill a week ago, and they had 5 days for some of their rank and file to evaluate it. They chose to do nothing with it. They decided that they needed more time to deliberate and that they would come back possibly with their own plan. Now, I respect their decision. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I respect what they did, and I'm confident that they will come back with something better than we even did.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to reading their bill. I look forward to seeing the changes, whether it's a wholesale change or whether they're just tweaking what we did. I'm confident that they are going to find some things that we possibly didn't find.
Then it goes to conference committee?
Well, it's a little early for that, but yes, we hope that it will
mm-hmm.
work its way out somehow.
We're here with Representative Joe Havman this morning, and if you have a question for Joe, you may call us at 395-1450, and you had some other things there you wanted to talk about,
well,
Joe?
I'll mention that Gary
got a call here.
Okay.
Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Yeah, Joe, I understand Bob Donetsky proposing doing away with state income tax.
You know, I did read something on Facebook about that. I have not heard the formal proposal. I don't know very much about it. We lowered the income tax slightly in the last budget year, gave a little bit back to the citizens. We have proposed an additional $20 million of targeted givebacks to the taxpayer. That's a small amount. But I haven't looked at Bob's proposal. I did look at it some months ago when we were working on the budget. And, boy, it's going to create a big hole.
I don't think so. He just proposed that. He didn't say how he's going to pay for it. He based it on, I think it was 6 or 7 other states that don't have an income tax.
Well, and that's great, but I'd like to get rid of it as well. I haven't read the details. Bob was on probes for 4 years. He's on policy committee now. But I'll love to talk to him about it and see where the cuts are going to come from to pay for that.
Yeah, I got a note for Duke here. Duke?
Yeah.
Did you know that Terry Burns jumped out of an airplane for his birthday?
Yes, I did.
Is that something, though?
I read about that.
Yeah, he's 70 years old.
Yeah, pretty good for him, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
He said if George Bush could do it, he thought he could do it at 70.
Well, he probably can.
Yeah, that's quite a feat.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, what a way to announce that you're running for the state legislature.
Well, it's kind of spectacular, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Good for him.
395-1450 is our number if you'd like to talk to our representative this morning. All right. What else are we going to talk about?
Well, one of the things, Juke, I am very proud of that we passed out the last week, and the Senate, it went over to the Senate. It was concurred with at the Senate, and it's on its way to the governor, is a bill called Indigent Defense. Now, as you know, I've been working on the corrections issues for a couple of years now and some corrections reform. This one I didn't have my hands in too much, although I supported it right from the start. Indigent defense is that process that's guaranteed in both the U.S. Constitution and the Michigan Constitution that says if you're arrested and charged with a crime, you cannot afford a defense.
Right.
You know, it's the state's responsibility to pay for that defense for you. And this is to make sure that there's not an imbalance between people that can afford a defense and those that are indigent.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a process in place, and this fundamentally improves that process to make sure that that counties are doing this correctly, that they're paying attention to it, and they're not playing favorites with public defenders, and certain defenders are getting more cases or being paid differently, and frankly that the indigent defendant is being shortchanged.
Okay. Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Yes, I just had a question on the Say Yes to Michigan campaign that they run all the time.
Oh, Pure Michigan?
Yeah, Pure Michigan.
Okay, sure.
You know, it seems like, you know, they're advertising, you know, very heavily in the Michigan markets. I mean, we're already here in Michigan. You know, why wouldn't they spend that money in Indiana and Illinois and Ohio and,
yeah,
you know, the southern states instead of, or all, even out west? But it just seems like, you know, every other commercial on local radio stations is, you know, a Pure Michigan commercial, and, you know, we're already here.
That's a great point, and I've heard that before, and I've questioned that myself. I'm being told that it's about an 80-20 split between outside of Michigan and in Michigan. Now, I have no way of verifying that, but that's what I've been told. I think when you buy on a national market, certainly some of that market's going to include the state you're in. But I'll tell you, I still get goosebumps, and I'm very proud of Michigan when I hear those. I think there is a benefit for us just to feel better about ourselves to some extent. But I know what you're saying, and I wish I hear less of them, even though they make me feel good about where I live. And I wish more people were talking about them in other states. But I do
right.
hear...
I mean, we're all happy to be here, and we're all happy to live along the lake. But, you know, if you're trying to get tourists, it doesn't make sense to spend millions of dollars advertising in the Michigan market when you know it doesn't. You know, some of these stations surely don't get to the borders,
right,
you know, of other states. And, you know, it seems like everybody's scrambling for money, and now all of a sudden you've got, you know, you're advertising, you're preaching to the choir, you know.
Exactly. So. And I assure you that I've been told it's about an 80-20, so we're only getting about 20% of those ads.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Yes, I just wanted to say I just got back from Florida, and I did see the ads running quite often down there, too.
Oh, good.
Great.
Good.
That's what I like to hear.
Well, I don't mind seeing them too much because it kind of reminds you that, hey, take a vacation at home.
You bet. Yeah. And, we had a tough decade last decade, and we're starting to come out of it, and we're starting to get some new pride in Michigan. But we do need to take some pride in where we have.
Absolutely. Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Yes. I just want to tell you, I was in downtown Chicago a couple of weeks ago, and I noticed a number of their city buses had Pure Michigan ads on it.
Oh, very good.
Different ones, you know, different places in Michigan, but going through the downtown Chicago area.
Very good. Okay.
I just want to tell you that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
I know if you're in the Chicago Loop, the Sleeping Bear Dunes looks pretty good.
Well, Juke, I was just up last weekend up in Traverse City celebrating my 30th wedding anniversary, and especially when you go north, you realize what a gem we have here in the state. And, to see that bay up in Traverse City and to see the sights up there, and even around here. And, my colleagues in Lansing will constantly comment about what a beautiful community we have and how much they love to come and vacation in Holland area. And, hey, I was born and raised here. I can sometimes take it for granted. And they ask me how often I go to Lake Michigan and go swim in the big lake, and I say, well, I'm not there very often. But if you're not on a shoreline here in Michigan, sometimes you take it for granted.
Yeah, you do. You do, unfortunately.
Yeah. And, you know, those Pure Michigan ads do so much good to tell the rest of the country that we are not just Detroit, Michigan. And because that's our economic base and our, you know, leading the state with the big three and with so much manufacturing, sometimes that's the only impression that people have of Michigan is that it's all Detroit. And that's why those Pure Michigan ads telling people about Holland, about Saugatuck, about the whole shoreline, about Traverse City and Mackinac Island and everything we have to offer are really, I think, a valuable thing.
All right. Can we talk about the core curriculum?
Common Core.
Common Core.
Common Core, you bet. Common Core was a last-minute addition to the budget that one of our members pushed very hard that he said he would not approve the budget. And kind of held the budget hostage a little bit with a handful of members if we did not address the fact that Common Core could not be in the Department of Education. It was, like I said, it was late. And it rubbed some of us the wrong way, because in my 4 years, nobody's ever said, you know, we're going to take our ball and go home unless we get this thing.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what happened. What we did is we said that the Common Core could not be part of the Michigan education unless the legislature took an affirmative vote to approve it. That's the way the budget passed. And I didn't like it. The governor didn't like it. A number of people are still stinging about it, but frankly, we're going to get through it. There's been a a study committee put together for the summer. Amanda Price is on that study committee to really dig in and do the homework on Common Core and what it means. What I'm being told is it was started by a group of governors as a means to have a common standard no matter where you are in the country. So if you move from California to Michigan and your child was taking third grade math or third grade English, and they move to Michigan and go into our schools here, they're going to get the same level. They're going to be at the same standard when they get here, and there's not going to be this differential between 50 states on what third grade math means, if I use that example. Some people have interpreted that as a federal takeover of our education system, and our education system is really run by the states. So we've got to work through that of, does it mean a federal takeover, or is it just, as I said, a standard that we all agree between the states that we're going to meet? I think where this got in trouble, as I said, it was started by governors, including Republican governors, but I believe Barack Obama kind of gave his blessing on this, and that's where it all went down the tubes. maybe if he had opposed it or kept his mouth shut, maybe this wouldn't have been a controversy. But we will be dealing with that this summer, and hopefully it'll come up for a vote. We'll have a better understanding of what Common Core is before October 1. There's a number of school districts here in West Michigan that I've talked to, that have talked to my colleagues and said, hey, we need it now, because they've started to implement the training for their teachers for August and September. And I apologize to those people that we will not have an answer on it before school starts.
Right.
That's a shame.
Now, this is going to be for all subjects or just the math, reading, etc.?
Well, as I understand, it's phased in. And I think right now it's math and English, I believe. But eventually it'll spread to across the board to other subjects. And that's one of the worries, is that those that are setting the standard, and it is different than curriculum, but those that are setting the standard are going to possibly go into the political correctness as we talk about science, we talk about evolution and global warming and history. Is you know, are people going to rewrite history from what you and I learned? Those are some of the concerns with a federal takeover, if you believe it's a federal takeover.
395-1450 is our number if you'd like to talk to Joe this morning. Our line is open. Anything else on your list there this morning, Joe?
Well, one of the other things that raised some controversy that we have accomplished last week and the week before was a school dissolution. And fortunately, this isn't affecting many schools yet, but we've had a couple of school districts that on the east side of the state that frankly just ran out of money. Buena Vista out of the Saginaw area, I believe the other one was Inkster, out of southeast Michigan, they ran out of money before the end of the school year. They couldn't pay their teachers. They closed up shop. They closed their schools. And we went and looked at those kind of school districts and developed a plan that said, how do we make sure that the kids are taken care of? I mean, they're being sent home weeks early.
Right.
So there is a method now that when that happens, that schools can, those students would be accommodated by neighboring schools. The school district itself in those two cases is going to close. Now they still have debt, as our school districts do. We bond for things, so there's certain debt that we pay for on our property taxes. That debt has to be repaid, so the property owners in those areas will continue to see property taxes pay for their outstanding debt. But if those school districts can't balance their books, those kids still have to be taken care of.
Right.
Our fundamental purpose, goal is to make sure that the kids are taken care of and the kids are educated. So there's a process in place now for those two school districts, and there's others that are on the cusp that may have problems that we're going to have to deal with. But that was very controversial, obviously, of telling school districts that they're going to close their doors and they no longer exist. And if you could imagine that if we ever did that to Holland High or West Ottawa or Zeeland and said you're no longer a school district.
That would be a problem.
Well, all the Panthers out in West Ottawa would you know, certainly be upset.
Yes, they would.
But the difference is our school districts over here know how to manage their budgets. And the Buena Vista in the Saginaw area, I believe, was receiving about $15,000 per student, which is about double from what most of our school districts are getting, and mm-hmm. they still couldn't manage their budget. They still were running in the red and ran out of money. Well, there's no excuse for that. Now, if we can get to them early enough and find those school districts, we have an emergency manager process that we can implement to help them get back on the track and get in the black, and we've had to do that in a number of school districts. These two districts were so far gone that we couldn't get to them in time. There was no emergency manager. They just went bankrupt. So where their debt will be paid, but the school district itself no longer exists.
Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Good morning. You're just talking about the schools going into debt or having so much debt. How does that happen when the state pays for, is supposed to pay for the students and all that stuff? How do they get into debt then?
Well, they get into debt because they're still local control. They're run by local school boards. They bond for a lot of their buildings, a lot of their cost. And frankly, they're just spending more than they're getting. That's the way all of us get into debt, is we spend too much. And it's unfortunate that so many school districts have fallen into that game. Some people will say that they need more state resources. I don't believe there's enough state resources that could have been given to these school districts to keep this problem from happening.
What are they spending their money on?
That's a great question, and I wish I knew the answer to that. That is something.
There's so
that
much money that we get paid in taxes, and it just seems like, I don't know, somebody's getting in their pocket or what.
Well, that could very well be, and there may be in these two school districts that may be pursued as well. As where was everything on the up and up, or were
Well, usually there's a kind of a formula that schools kind of follow. You know, you're looking at like 80-20, and 80% is fixed
yes.
costs, and you got 20% you can play with.
Well, and about 80% is your salary.
So yeah.
So don't they have I know West Ottawa had some time back they wanted a new tracks or something. Running tracks.
Sure.
Now, doesn't that have to be voted on by the people, didn't it?
If it's a bond issue.
If it's a bond issue, yes.
Yeah. Well,
yes.
It just seems funny that the state is paying for the schools, and they're all going into debt. Something's going wrong with the money that they're getting.
Well, I agree with you. And
okay.
That is, we want to maintain that local control where we have local people making decisions for our school districts. But in those cases where those local people have, either through incompetence or corruption possibly, drove that district into debt, sometimes the state has to come in and take over.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, and take, Detroit, for instance. I know way back when the school board was getting a lot of money, getting paid a lot of money. And in most places, school boards are pretty much a labor of love.
Exactly, yes. there's stories about Detroit, both with their school board and their city councils, on what their budgets are.
Yeah.
The city council in Detroit, their budgets are higher than my budget as a state legislator.
Right.
They make more than I do as a state legislator,
yeah.
And they have a bigger staff just to be a city councilman. So there's some problems there, that a culture that they have to get past.
They have to, probably a chauffeur.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
I know they have a car.
Yeah.
So... those are perks that the rest of us throughout the state have said that doesn't make sense. And like I said, their benefits are far better than mine as a state legislator.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons they have the problems they do.
They overpay the people that don't have to be paid.
Well, and someone once, I just read this not long ago, that their cost to do government, the cost of government is, I I believe, the most expensive in the country. If you look at their budget and how many people they serve and just the structure of their governmental unit, it's the most expensive one in our country. So hopefully Kevin Orr, the emergency manager, can get his arms around that and start to change that. We know it's pension cost. We know it's retirement pension. There's a lot of liabilities there that he's working through. But their structure of how they pay their people and how many they pay is part of what the culture that he has to change to.
It is. And then kids down there probably get things offered to them that we don't have here. For instance, I remember they used to have link trainers for kids who wanted to take aviation.
Oh, really?
And I didn't see those in any of our high schools over here.
Well, certainly they have challenges in their school, in the Detroit school system and other districts that we don't have. And we're blessed that we don't have all of their challenges. Certainly our superintendents would say there's some commonalities there, too. Schools have changed in their responsibilities. I firmly believe that we have to put more responsibility on the parents to take care of their kids.
Yeah.
And teachers and administrators continually talk about the fact that they have to educate everybody, no matter what kind of household they came out of, no matter whether that child studied the night before or got breakfast that morning. I understand that, and I wish we could come together and figure out a way to put responsibility back on the parents to make sure the kids come to school ready to learn.
Yes, indeed. With their lunch sack.
Yeah. The way we used to do, Joe.
The way we used to do, right. Well, Joe, it's about time to wind things up here, and I thank you very much for being our guest this morning here on our Talk of the Town program.